Anne-Louise Lambert and Thelma Whiteley. Part 7, The Storm Bursts.
The honor and glory of having a lover of her own was soon to fall to Molly Gibson's share. It was Mr. Cox, her father's former pupil, who came back to Hollingford to follow out the purpose he had announced to Mr. Gibson some time before the latter's marriage, of inducing Molly to become his wife as soon as he should have succeeded to his uncle's estate. He was now a rich, though still a red-haired, young man.
Dear, dear Mr. Cox, it is such a pleasure to me to make acquaintance with the former pupils of my husband. He has spoken to me so often of you that I quite feel as if you were one of the family.
Oh, thank you. Is Miss Gibson in? I knew her formerly, and it would be a great pleasure to meet
you. Certainly. I am sure she will be so glad to see you. I sent her and Cynthia. You don't know my daughter Cynthia, I think.
No.
Out for a walk. But I think they will be back very shortly.
Oh, Mama, I'm so frosty in the... Oh, Mr. Cox, is it you? Oh, how very nice to see you again.
Miss Gibson, it seems such a long time since I saw you. You are so much grown. So much... Well, well.
This is my daughter, Miss Cynthia Kirkpatrick. Mr. Cox, a former pupil of Mr. Gibson. How do you do?
How do you do, Miss Kirkpatrick? How do you do?
Come in. Ah, Mr. Cox. Come in. Sit down. Now then, what did you want to speak to me about in such secrecy?
Mr. Gibson, I dare say you'll be surprised. I'm sure I am at what I want to say. But I think it's the part of an honourable man, as you said yourself, sir, some time ago, to speak to the father first. And you, sir, stand in the place of a father to Miss Kirkpatrick.
Miss Kirkpatrick?
And I should like to express my feelings, my hopes, or perhaps I should say wishes. In short,
you did say Miss Kirkpatrick.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
I know it may appear inconsistent and changeable, but I do assure you I came here with a heart as faithful to your daughter as ever beat in a man's bosom. I most fully intended to offer myself and all that I had to her acceptance before I left. Oh, but really, sir, if you had seen her manner to me, every time I endeavoured to press my suit a little, it was more than coy. It was absolutely repellent. While Miss Kirkpatrick.
While Miss Kirkpatrick?
I was only going to say that so far as one can judge from manner and willingness to listen and apparent pleasure in my visit, I think I may venture to hope that Miss Kirkpatrick is not quite indifferent to me. And I would wait. You have no objection, have you? To my speaking to her, I mean. I do assure you I haven't a chance with Miss Gibson.
No, I don't suppose you have. Well, don't go and fancy that's what it is that's annoying me. You're mistaken about Miss Kirkpatrick, however. I don't believe she could ever have meant to give you encouragement.
Oh, I think, sir, if you could have seen her. At any rate, you have no objection to my taking my chance and speaking to her?
Of course, if you won't be convinced otherwise, I can have no objection, but... If you'll take my advice, you'll spare yourself the pain of a refusal. I may perhaps be trenching on confidence, but I think I ought to tell you that her affections are otherwise engaged.
Oh, no, it cannot be. Mr. Gibson, there must be some mistake. Well, I have gone as far as I durst in expressing my feelings, and her manner has been most gracious. I don't think she could have misunderstood my meaning. Perhaps she has changed her mind. It is possible that, after consideration, she has learnt to prefer another, is it not?
Oh, by another, you mean yourself, I suppose. Well, I can't believe in such inconstancy, but I should be very sorry to think that Miss Kirkpatrick could be guilty of it.
But she may. There is a chance. Will you allow me to see her?
Well, certainly, my poor fellow. I will send her to you directly. Ah, Cynthia.
Is Mr. Cox still downstairs?
He's gone. He asked me to give you both his kind regards. I believe he's leaving this afternoon.
I trust this will never occur again, Cynthia. I should not feel satisfied with the conduct of any girl, however free, who could receive marked attentions from a young man with complacency and so lead him to make an offer which she never meant to accept. But what must I think of a young woman in your position, engaged, yet accepting most graciously, for that was the way Mr. Cox expressed it, the overtures of another man? Do you consider what unnecessary pain you've given him by your thoughtless behaviour? I call it thoughtless, but it's the mildest epithet I can apply to it. I beg that such a thing may not occur again.
Please, Mr. Gibson, hear my side of the story before you speak so hardly to me. I did not mean to flirt. I merely meant to make myself agreeable. I can't help doing that. And that goose of a Mr. Cox seems to have fancied I meant to give him encouragement.
You mean that you were not aware that he was falling in love with you?
Well, I suppose I must speak truly. I did think once or twice that he was becoming a little more complimentary than the occasion required. But I hate throwing cold water on people, and I never thought he could take it into his silly head to fancy himself seriously in love and to make such a fuss.
You seem to have been pretty well aware of his silliness. I should rather call it simplicity. Don't you think you should have remembered that it might lead him to exaggerate what you were doing and saying into encouragement?
Perhaps. I dare say I'm all wrong and he's all right. We used to say in France, the absent are always wrong. But really, it seems as if here... Besides, Roger would not allow me to consider myself as finally engaged to him. I would willingly have done it, but he would not let me.
Nonsense. Don't let's go on talking about it. I've said all I mean to say. I believe you are only thoughtless, as I told you before. But don't let it happen again. Now I must be off about my business.
Not guilty, but we recommend the prisoner not to do it again. It's pretty much that, isn't it, Molly? I do believe your father might make a good woman of me yet, if only he would take the pains and wasn't quite so severe. To think of that stupid little fellow making all this mischief.
I was afraid he was becoming very fond of you. At least it struck me so once or twice. But I knew he would not stay long, and I thought it would only make you uncomfortable if I said anything about it. But now I wish I had.
Oh, it wouldn't have made a bit of difference. I knew he liked me. And I like to be liked. It's born in me to try to make everyone I come near fond of me, but then they shouldn't carry it too far. Oh, I shall hate red-haired people for the rest of my life. To think of such a man as that being the cause of your father's displeasure with me. Oh, but do let's talk of something else. Or better still, let me go and finish my letter to Roger, or I shall be too late for the African mail.
Oh, isn't it gone? Oh, I ought to have reminded you. It'll be too late. The mail goes in the morning now.
Oh.
Did you not see the notice at the post office? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, it can't be helped. Oh. It is to be hoped that it will be the greater treat when he does get it. No, I have a far greater weight on my heart, because your father seems so displeased with me. I was fond of him. Now he's making me quite a coward. You see, Molly, I've never lived with people with such a high standard of conduct before, and I don't know quite how to behave.
You must learn. You'll find Roger quite as strict in his notions of right and wrong.
Ah, but he's in love with me.
Molly turned her head away and was silent. It was no use combating the truth, and she tried rather not to feel it. Poor Molly had not passed a cheerful winter. It seemed as if there was not and never could be in this world any help for the dumb discordancy between her father and his wife. Day after day, month after month, year after year, would Molly have to sympathize with her father and pity her stepmother. Molly now learnt to long after the vanished blindness in which her father had passed the first year of his marriage. Yet there were no outrageous infractions of domestic peace. Some people might say that Mr. Gibson accepted the inevitable. He told himself in a more homely phrase that it was no use crying over spilt milk. One morning, a letter arrived at the Gibsons' house, which was greeted in various ways by the four people who sat around the breakfast table.
I think they
might have remembered that I am a generation nearer to them than she is. But nobody ever thinks of family affections these days.
If you want us to sympathize with you, tell us what is the nature of your woe.
Why, I dare say it's what he means is a very kind attention. Only I think I ought to have been asked before, Cynthia.
Who's he? And what's meant for a kind attention?
Why, my brother-in-law, Mr. Kirkpatrick QC, as he is now, of course. This letter is from him, and he wants Cynthia to go and pay them a visit, and never says anything about you or me, my dear. And he should have asked us first, I think.
Well, as I couldn't possibly have gone, it makes very little difference to me.
But I could have gone. I've agreed mine not to let Cynthia go.
I can't go, Mama. My gowns are all so shabby, and my old bonnet must do for the summer.
Well, you can buy a new one. And I'm sure it's high time you should get yourself another silk gown. You must have been saving up a great deal, for I don't know when you've had any new clothes.
I cannot go. I should like it very much, but I really cannot go. Suppose you offer to go instead of me.
No, that won't do. You can't transfer invitations in that way. But really, this excuse about your clothes does appear to be very trivial, Cynthia, if you've got no other reason to give.
It's a real, true reason to me. You must let me judge for myself. It would not do to go there in a state of shabbiness, for even when they lived in Doughty Street, I remember my aunt was very particular about dress. Pray, don't say anything more about it, for I know it would not do.
What have you done with all your money, I wonder? You've £20 a year, thanks to Mr. Gibson and me, and I'm sure you haven't spent more than £10.
I hadn't many things when I came back from France. Pray, let it be decided at once. I can't go, and there's an end of it.
Cynthia! Well, I don't understand it at all. Do you, Molly?
No. I know she doesn't like spending money on her dress and is very careful.
But then she must have got the money somewhere. It has always struck me that if you have no extravagant habits and you do not live up to your income, you must have a certain sum to lay by at the end of the year. Have I not often said so, Mr. Gibson?
Probably.
Well, then, apply the same reason to Cynthia's case, and then I ask what has become of the money.
I cannot tell. She may have given it away to someone who wants it.
It's very clear that she's neither got the dress nor the money necessary for this London visit, and that she doesn't want any inquiries to be made on the subject. She likes mysteries, in fact, and I detest them. Still, I think it's a desirable thing for her to keep up the acquaintance of friendship, or whatever it is to be called, with her father's family. And I shall gladly give her £10. And if that's not enough, why, either you must help her out, or she must do without some superfluous article of dress or another.
I'm sure there never was such a kind, dear, generous man as you are, Mr. Gibson. To think of your being a stepfather and so good to my poor fatherless girl. But, Molly, my dear, I think you'll acknowledge that you two are very fortunate in your stepmother. £10! Dear Mr. Gibson, how generous you are.
May I go and tell her?
Yes, do, love. Tell her it would be so ungrateful to refuse. And tell her that your father wishes her to go. And tell her, too, that it would be quite wrong not to avail herself of an opening which may by and by be extended to the rest of the family. I shall never be content till, by putting in a little hint here and a little hint there, I've induced them to send you an invitation. A month or two in London would do you so much good, Molly.
Molly had left the room before this speech was ended, and Mr. Gibson was occupied with a newspaper. But Mrs. Gibson finished it to herself very much to her own satisfaction. Molly found Cynthia in the drawing-room, standing in the bow window looking out on the garden.
Oh, Molly, I'm always so glad to have you with me.
You know, I think you'll be glad to hear what I've got to tell you. I think you would really like to go to London, shouldn't you?
Yes, but it's no use liking. Don't you begin about it, Molly, for the thing is settled, and I can't tell you why, but I can't go.
It is only the money, and Papa has been so kind about it, and is going to give you £10.
How kind he is! Well, but I ought not to take it. Oh, I wish I'd known you years ago. I would have been different to what I am.
Oh, never mind that. We like you as you are.
I do think your father is the most charming man I know. And now let us think about this London visit.
Then you will go.
Oh, yes, I will.
Oh, good.
I dare say it's not wise, but it will be pleasant. Oh, it will be delightful. And I can make £10 go ever so far. And in some ways it will be such a comfort to get out of Hollingford.
Oh, will it?
Oh, yes. Oh, you know I don't mean it will be a comfort to leave you. But after all, a country town is a country town, but London is London. Oh, you need not smile at my truisms. I've always had a sympathy with Monsieur de la Police. Oh, come, let's dance. Monsieur de la Police est mort encore dans sa vie. Encore devant sa mortalité.
Oh, my word, I only thought of going mad. What is all this about, pray?
Only because I'm so glad to be going to London, Mama.
I am not sure if it's quite the thing for an engaged young lady to be so beside herself at the prospect of gaiety. In my time, our great pleasure in our lover's absence was in thinking about them.
I should have thought that that would have given you pain. Now, to tell you the truth, just at that moment, I had forgotten Roger. I hope it wasn't very wrong. Osborne Hamley looks as if he did all my share as well as his own of fretting after Roger. How ill he looked yesterday.
Yes, I was quite shocked.
Yes, I'm afraid that young man won't live long. Very much afraid.
Oh, but what will happen if he dies? And Roger away too.
Well, it would be very sad, of course, and we should all feel it very much, I've no doubt. For I've always been fond of Osborne. In fact, before Roger became, as it were, my own flesh and blood, I liked Osborne better. But we must not forget the living, dear. Our dear, good Roger would, I am sure, do all in his power to fill Osborne's place in any way. And his marriage need not be so long delayed.
Don't speak of that in the same breath as Osborne's life.
Why, my dear, it is a very natural thought. For poor Roger's sake, you know, one wishes it not to be so very, very long an engagement. And I was only answering Molly's question, after all. People must die, you know, young as well as old. One can't help following out one's thoughts.
If I ever suspected Roger of following out his thoughts in a similar way, I'd never speak to him again.
As if he would. And you shouldn't suppose it of him, Cynthia. I can't see the great harm of it all for my part. A young man strikes us all as looking very ill, and I'm sure I'm sorry for it, but illness very often leads to death. I don't like talking of death any more than anyone else. But I should think myself wanting in strength of mind if I could not look forward to the consequences of death.
Do you look forward to the consequences of my death, Mama?
You really are the most unfeeling girl I ever met with. I wish I could give you a little of my own sensitiveness, for I have too much for my happiness. But don't let us speak of Osborne's looks again. 10 to 1, it was only some temporary fatigue. I was very foolish to attribute it to anything more serious, and dear Papa might be displeased if he knew I had done so. Medical men don't like other people to be making conjectures about health, you know. Now, let us consider your dress, Cynthia. I could not understand how you had spent your money and made so little show with it.
Mama, it may sound very cross, but I must tell Molly and you and everybody once and for all that as I don't want and didn't ask for more than my allowance, I'm not going to answer any questions about what I do with it.
Well...
In no time at all, Mrs. Gibson had conceived the intention of accompanying Cynthia up to London for a few days' visit. To Molly, it seemed too charming a proposal ever to come to pass. She had never allowed herself to recognize the restraint she was under in her stepmother's presence. But all at once she found it out when her heart danced at the idea of 3 whole days, for that it would be, at least, of perfect freedom of intercourse with her father.
But then I am so sensitive. Dear Lady Cumnor always used to say I was like a thermometer. Molly, you are not listening to me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was talking of dear Lady Cumnor. You've heard how ill she has become.
But Lady Harriet said in her last letter that they hoped she would be stronger than she'd been for years.
Yes, Lady Harriet. Of course, everyone who knows Lady Harriet knows that she has too sanguine a temperament for her statements to be perfectly relied on. Strangers are often deluded by Lady Harriet. She has an offhand manner which takes them in. But she does not mean half, she says.
Well, we will hope she does in this instance. They're in London now. And Lady Cumnor hasn't suffered from the journey.
They say so, but I feel I simply must go and see for myself. It's the only way to calm my anxiety. Besides, I don't quite like your travelling alone.
Oh, yes, Mama.
Now, don't sit there all day long, my dear. There is a great deal to prepare for our journey.
Yes, Mama. Oh, Molly, you're very glad to get rid of us, aren't you?
Not of you, Cynthia. At least I don't think I am. Only if you but knew how I love Papa, and how I used to see a great deal more of him than I ever do now.
Oh, I often think what interlopers we must seem, and are, in fact.
Well, I don't feel you as such.
You, at any rate, have been a new delight to me. A sister. And I never knew how charming such a relationship could be.
But Mama?
She is Papa's wife. I don't mean to say I'm not often very sorry to feel I'm no longer first with him. But it was Roger who told me how I ought to take Papa's marriage when I was first startled and grieved at the news. Oh, Cynthia, what a great thing it is to be loved by him.
Yes, I suppose it is. All the same, I'm afraid he'll expect me to be always as good as he fancies me now, and I shall have to walk on tiptoe for the rest of my life.
But you are good, Cynthia.
No, I'm not. You're just as much mistaken as he is, and some day I shall go down in your opinions with a run, just like the hall clock the other day when the spring broke.
I think he'll love you just as much.
Could you? Would you be my friend if it turned out that I had done very wrong things?
I wish I could help you. Or even understand you.
You can help me. Please, will you help me to pack? There's a real tangible piece of kindness and not sentimental consolation for sentimental distresses, which are perhaps imaginary after all.
Now, Papa, I'm going to have you all to myself for a whole week. You must be very obedient.
Well, don't be tyrannical, then. You're walking me out of breath. And we're cutting Miss Browning in our hurry. Good morning, Miss Browning.
Oh, good morning.
Well, we've just been seeing my wife and her daughter off to London. Mrs. Gibson has gone for the week.
Deary, to London, and only for a week. Why, I can remember it's being a 3 days' journey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll be very lonesome for you, Molly, without your young companion.
Oh, yes, I shall miss Cynthia very much.
You must come and drink tea with us some evening. We must try and cheer you up. Shall it be Tuesday?
Oh, that's very kind of you. Tuesday it shall be.
Thank you.
I shall look forward to it, and we shall drink Lady Harriet's tea. Good day to you.
Good morning, Miss Browning.
Molly?
Papa, how could you waste one of our evenings? We have but six in all, and I'd so reckoned on our doing all sorts of things together.
What sort of things?
I don't know. Everything that is unrefined and ungenteel. We'll have bread and cheese for lunch this very day, and you shall wear your slippers in the drawing room every evening. Oh, Papa, don't you think I could ride Nora Craner again?
Where is the side saddle to come from?
Oh, to be sure, the old one won't fit that great Irish mare. But I'm not particular. I think I could manage somehow.
Well, thank you very much, but I'm not quite going to return into barbarism.
Oh, think of riding down the lanes and the honeysuckle and the hay. Oh, how I should like to see Merriman's farm again. Papa, do let me have one ride with you. Please do. I'm sure we could manage it somehow.
And somehow it was managed. Somehow all Molly's wishes came to pass. There was only one little drawback to the week of holiday. Everybody would ask Molly out to tea.
You've had a letter, you say, my dear. I dare say Mrs. Gibson has written to you.
It's a large sheet, and Cynthia has written on one half to me, and all the rest is to Papa.
And what does Cynthia say? Is she enjoying herself?
Oh, yes, I think so. They've had a dinner party, and one night when Mama was at Lady Cumnor's, Cynthia went to the theatre.
On my word, and all in 1 week. I call that dissipation. Well, I hope Cynthia won't find Hollingford dull when she comes back.
Oh, I don't think that's likely. You girls see a great deal of Mr. Preston, don't you, Molly?
Not much. What should make you think so?
Oh, a little bird told us. The little bird was flying about one day in Heath Lane, and it saw Mr. Preston and a young lady. We won't say who, but perhaps Miss Molly is in the secret, and we ought not to ask her about it.
It can be no great secret, Phoebe, for Miss Hornblower says Mr. Preston owns to be engaged.
At any rate, it isn't to Cynthia, that I know positively. And pray, put a stop to any such reports. You don't know what mischief they may do. I do so hate that kind of chatter.
Really, Miss Molly?
I beg your pardon.
Well, I dare say you did not mean to speak so to sister.
But don't you see how bad it is to talk of such things in such a way? Supposing one of them cared for someone else, and that might happen, you know. Mr. Preston, for instance, may be engaged to someone else.
Well, Molly, I pity the woman. I have a very poor opinion of Mr. Preston. He's a great flirt, and young ladies had better not have much to do with him.
I dare say it was all accident, their meeting in Heath Lane.
I know nothing about it, and I dare say I have been impertinent. Only please don't talk about it any more. I have my reasons for asking you. But I must go. Father will be at home.
Off you go, then. How you're growing, Molly.
As tall and straight as a poplar tree, as the old song says.
Goodbye, and thank you for tea.
Goodbye.
Grow in grace, Molly, as well as in good looks. Phoebe. It was Molly herself that was with Mr. Preston in Heath Lane.
Gracious goodness me! How do you know?
By putting two and two together. Didn't you notice how red Molly went and then pale, and how she said she knew for a fact that Mr. Preston and Miss Kirkpatrick were not engaged?
Well, perhaps not engaged, but Mrs. Goodenough saw them loitering together.
She saw Molly and took her for Cynthia. I'll answer for it.
Well, it wouldn't be a bad match, sister.
It would be a bad match for Mr. Gibson's daughter. If I had known what I know now, we'd never have had Mr. Preston to tea that time.
Why? What do you know?
Things that... But I don't think you ought to hear, Phoebe. He was engaged to a Miss Gregson at Henwick, and her father made inquiries and heard so much that was bad about him that he made his daughter break off the match. And she's dead since.
How shocking!
Besides, he plays at billiards.
No.
And he bets at races.
No! But isn't it strange that the Earl keeps him on as his agent?
No. He's very clever about land and very sharp in law affairs. And my lord isn't bound to notice if indeed he knows of the manner in which Mr. Preston talks when he is taking too much wine.
Oh, sister, is he a drunkard? And we have had him to tea.
I didn't say he was a drunkard. A man may take too much wine occasionally without being a drunkard. Don't let me hear you using such coarse words, Phoebe.
Oh, I do hope it wasn't Molly Gibson.
You may hope as much as you like. I'm pretty sure it was. However, we'd better say nothing about it. Mr. Preston might do for Cynthia, who's been brought up in France. He must not and shall not have Molly if I go into church and forbid the banns myself. But I'm afraid there's something between her and him. We must keep a lookout, Phoebe. I'll be her guardian angel in spite of herself.
Mrs. Gibson came back to Hollingford full of rose-coloured accounts of London. Lady Cumnor had been gracious and affectionate, Lady Harriet charming and devoted to her old governess. Cynthia, too, was so much admired, and as for her dress, Mrs. Kirkpatrick had showered down ball dresses and bonnets and mantles like a fairy godmother. Mr. Gibson's poor present of £10 shrank into very small dimensions compared with all this munificence.
And the Kirkpatricks are so fond of her. I don't know when we shall have her back. And now, Molly, what have you and Papa been doing? Very gay you sounded in your letter. I had not time to read it in London, so I put it in my pocket and read it on the coach coming home. But, my dear child, you do look so old-fashioned with your gown made all tight and your hair all tumbling about in curls. Curls are quite gone out.
I sent Cynthia an African letter. Did you hear anything of what was in it?
Oh, yes, poor child. It made her very uneasy. She said she did not feel inclined to go to Mr. Rawson's ball. But there was really nothing for her to fidget herself about. Roger only said he had had a touch of fever.
Fever?
Yes, but he was better when he wrote it. He says every European has to be acclimatized by fever in that part of Africa.
And did she go?
Go?
To the ball?
Oh, yes, to be sure. And she really did look most lovely. And she danced every dance. I am sure she enjoyed herself, but I must finish my unpacking before your dear Papa returns home.
Oh, Roger. Roger. I wish and pray that you were safe home again. How could we all bear it if... Oh, I don't believe she loves him as she ought. She could not have gone and danced. What shall I do if she does not? I can bear anything but that.
There was no more news of Roger Hamley until some time after Cynthia had returned from her London visit. She came back looking fresher and prettier than ever, beautifully dressed thanks to her own good taste and her cousin's generosity, full of amusing details of the gay life she had been enjoying, yet not at all out of spirits at having left it behind her. She brought home all sorts of pretty and dainty devices for Molly. Yet somehow or other, Molly felt that Cynthia was changed in her relation to her. One morning, in the first week of Cynthia's return home, Mr. Gibson ran into the drawing room.
Girls, here, read this pamphlet.
What is it?
It's a letter from Roger in Africa, read out at the annual gathering of the Geographical Society by Lord Hollingford. I'll just go and tell Mama the good news.
Oh, well, look. The reading of this letter was received with the greatest interest, and several subsequent speakers paid the writer the highest compliments.
Oh, Cynthia, are you not proud?
I'm afraid I'm not as much struck by the wonder of the thing as you are, Molly. Besides, I heard of the meeting before I left London, but I didn't hear all the fine things they said of him. But then you know somebody is bound to pay compliments when a lord takes the trouble to read one of Roger's letters aloud.
Nonsense. You know you don't believe what you were saying. Why, you might have been there. It says many ladies were present. Oh, you might have told your uncle how matters stood and he would have taken you there.
Once and for all, Molly, do learn to understand that it is and always has been my wish not to have the relation which Roger and I bear to each other talked about. When the right time comes, I will make it known, but I'm not going to make mischief and get myself into trouble by letting it out before time. I'd sooner break it off and have done with it. I can't be any worse off than I am now.
I can't understand you.
No, I dare say you can't. I hope you never will. Oh, I'm so afraid.
Oh, Cynthia, have I been plaguing you? Have I vexed you? Don't say you're afraid of my knowing you. Of course you've your faults. Everybody has. But I think I love you the better for them.
Oh, I don't know that I'm so bad. But I've got into scrapes. I'm in a scrape now. It all came about without my ever thinking I was doing wrong. I've a great mind to tell you all about it, Molly.
Well, here you both are. I've been waiting for you to assist me with the alterations to my new gown. And now Miss Browning has called Molly. You'd better come now.
Yes, Mama.
No, indeed. I've no patience with London. Cynthia is much better out of it, Mrs. Gibson.
But perhaps she may live in London some of these days.
Oh, time enough to be thinking of London. What I wish her is an honest country husband with enough to live upon and a little to lay by and a good character to boot. And mind that, Molly. Yes, I wish Cynthia a husband with a good character. But she's got her mother to look after her. You've none. When your mother was alive, she was a dear friend of mine, so I'm not going to let you throw yourself away upon anyone whose life isn't clear and above board. You may depend upon that.
I am sure, Miss Browning, you are very much mistaken if you think that any mother could take more care of Molly than I do. I can't think there is any need for anyone to interfere in this way. Just as if we were all wrong and you were all right. It hurts my feelings, indeed it does. For Molly can tell you there is not a thing or favour that Cynthia has that she has not.
I did not mean to offend you. But I just meant to give Molly a hint. She understands what I mean.
I'm sure I don't. I'm not thinking of marrying. I don't want to marry anybody at all. But if I did and you were not a good man, I should thank you for coming and warning me of it.
I shall not stand on warning you, Molly. I shall forbid the banns in church if need be.
Do.
Well, I won't say any more. Perhaps I was mistaken, but remember what I've said, Molly. There's no harm in that at any rate. Well, now, I must be off. I'm sorry I hurt your feelings, Mrs. Gibson. As stepmothers go, I think you try and do your duty. Good morning. Goodbye to you both, and God bless you.
Good day.
Try and do my duty, indeed. I should be obliged to you, Molly, if you would take care not to behave in such a manner as to bring down upon me such impertinence as I have just been receiving from Miss Browning.
I don't know what made her talk as she did.
I'm sure I don't know, and I don't care either. For I know that I was never spoken to as if I was trying to do my duty before trying, indeed. Everybody always knew that I did it, without talking about it before my face in that rude manner, and as if I didn't look after you quite as much as I look after Cynthia.
Why, what is it?
Molly has been doing something which has set that impertinent Miss Browning off into lecturing me on trying to do my duty. If your poor father had but lived, Cynthia, I should not have been spoken to as I have been. A stepmother trying to do her duty, indeed.
What is it, Molly?
Miss Browning seemed to think I was likely to marry someone whose character was objectionable.
You, Molly?
Yes. She once before spoke to me. I suspect she has got some notion about Mr. Preston in her head.
Mr. Preston?
And she spoke as if Mama did not look after me enough. I think she was rather provoking.
Not rather, but very, very impertinent.
What could have put it into her head?
I don't know that it was Mr. Preston she was thinking about. It was only a guess. When you were both in London, she spoke about him. I thought she had heard something about you and him, Cynthia.
Well, after all, it's only your fancy that she was alluding to Mr. Preston. So perhaps we'd better not say any more about him.
After Miss Browning's unlucky conversation, things began to be ajar in the Gibsons' house. Cynthia seemed to keep everyone at mental arm's length and particularly avoided any private talks with Molly. Mrs. Gibson, still cherishing a grudge against Miss Browning, chose to exercise a most wearying supervision over the poor girl. It was a very heavy time for Molly. Zest and life had fled and left so many of the old delights mere shells of seeming.
Molly, where's Cynthia?
Gone out to do some errands.
Well, it's a pity, but never mind. Put on your bonnet and cloak as fast as you can. I've had to borrow old Simpson's dog cart and thought a ride out would do you both good.
Oh, yes, please.
But as it is, you must walk home alone. I'll drive you as far on the Barford Road as I can, and then you must jump down and make your own way home. I can't take you on to Broadhurst's. I may be kept there for hours.
Oh, yes, Papa, I'll come at once. Oh, this is charming.
Aye, for youth, not for crabbed age. My bones are getting rheumatic and would rather go smoothly over macadamized streets.
That's treason to this lovely view and this fine, pure air. Oh, look, Papa, we can see the blue line of the Malverns now.
Aye, so we can. Oh, there. Come on. Oh.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
It is that, Goosey. Well, it's time you were on your way. Now jump down, lassie, and make the best of your way home before it gets dark.
Yes, Papa. I'll take the shortcut by Cawston Heath. Goodbye, Papa.
And I say it must be.
And I beg you to leave me alone.
Oh!
Molly. Oh, Molly, come and judge between
us. Judge? What?
The subject of our conversation does not well admit of a third person's presence. I must beg you to fix some other time and place where we can finish our discussion.
I will go if Cynthia wishes me to, Mr. President.
No, no, stay. I want you to hear it all. I wish I'd told you sooner.
You mean that you regret that she has not been made aware of our engagement?
Engagement? Oh, I don't believe him, Cynthia. Don't cry. I don't believe him.
No, Cynthia, pray, pray do not go on so. You can't think how it distresses
me. Go away. Don't you see you'll make her worse?
I will go if Cynthia tells me.
Oh, Molly, I don't know what to do.
Run to that cottage in the trees and fetch a cup of water quickly.
You will not leave before I come back.
No, don't you see she can't move in this state?
Oh, Josh. Oh, Molly, I do hate her.
But what did he mean by saying you were engaged to him?
It's too long a story to tell. And I'm not strong enough. As soon as I can walk, let us get home.
With all my heart.
She's coming back.
Here, drink this.
Now, we had better go home as fast as you can manage. It's getting dark.
I think since Miss Gibson has made herself acquainted with this much, we had better let her know the whole truth. That you are engaged to marry me as soon as you are 20.
As I know that Cynthia is engaged to another man, you can hardly expect me to believe what you say.
I'm not engaged. Neither to the person you mean, nor to Mr. Preston.
I think I have some letters that would convince Miss Gibson of the truth of what I have said, and which will convince Mr. Osborne Hamley, if necessary. I conclude it is to him that she is alluding.
I am quite puzzled by you both. The only thing I do know is that we ought not to be standing here at this time of the evening, and that Cynthia and I shall go home directly. Now, if you want to talk to Miss Kirkpatrick, why don't you come to my father's house and ask to see her openly, like a gentleman?
I am perfectly willing. I shall be only too glad to explain to Mr. Gibson
pray,
the circumstances.
Pray don't, Molly. You don't know anything about it. Do let us go. I will tell you all about it when we are home.
I do not know what you will say at home. But can you deny that you are my promised wife? Can you deny that it has only been at your earnest request that I have kept the engagement secret so long?
Since you will have it out, I own that what you say is literally true. That when I was a neglected girl of 16, you, whom I believed to be my friend, lent me money at my need and made me give you a promise of marriage.
Made you?
Made is not the right word, I confess. I liked you then. But now I know you better. I tell you once and for all that nothing shall ever make me marry you.
You may believe all the bad things you like about me, Cynthia, but I don't think you can doubt my love for you.
I do doubt it.
You do not call it love, which has been willing to wait for years, to be silent when silence was desired. Oh, Cynthia, if you will but keep your word and marry me, I swear I'll make you love me in return.
Oh, I wish I'd never borrowed that unlucky money. I thought if I could but repay it, it would set me free.
You make it sound as if you sold yourself for £20.
I did not sell myself. I liked you then. Oh, how I do hate you now.
I see. Well, ladies, I will bid you good evening.
Molly, if you pity me, if you love me, don't say anything more just now. We shall have to look as if nothing had happened when we get home.
Why?
Come to my room when we go upstairs to bed and I will tell you all. I know you'll blame me terribly, but I will tell you all.
Said I might come and that you would tell me everything.
You know all, I think. But perhaps you don't know the excuses I have.
I can't help fancying that if you told Papa...
No, that I won't do. Unless I leave here at once.
Please don't go off into such wild talking. Now, I don't believe that you have done so very wrong. That horrid man has managed to get you involved in some way. I'm sure Papa could set it to rights.
No! Do you think I forget how severe he was at the time of that wretched Mr. Cox? Oh, I couldn't bear it. If he were to know, he would be so angry with me, and I have so liked him.
Oh, shh. Then he shall not know.
Then you'll never say any more. Never. Promise me.
Never till you give me leave. Now, let me see if I cannot help you. Let us talk it over. When did it all begin?
Long ago. 4 or 5 years. I was such a child to be left all to myself. It was the holidays, and Mama was away visiting, and the Donaldsons asked me to go with them to the Worcester Festival. I had been shut up in that dreary house at Ashcombe where Mama had her school. It belonged to Lord Cumnor, and Mr. Preston had to see it was in good repair. But besides that, he was very intimate with us. I believe Mama thought... Well... At any rate, he came a great deal about the house and knew as much as anyone about our affairs. Well, one day he came and found me upset because, though Mama had written word I might go to Worcester, she never said how I was to get any money for the journey, much less anything for dress.
Well, why didn't you write and tell her?
I wish I had her letter to show you. You must have seen some of Mama's letters. She always seems to leave out just the important point of every fact. Well, Mr. Preston made me tell him all my troubles. I do sometimes think he was very nice in those days, and somehow I never thought of it as wrong. He had £20 in his pocket, and he shouldn't want it for months. I could repay it, or rather Mama could, when it suited her. Well, that was the beginning. It doesn't sound very wrong, does it, Molly?
No, Cynthia, it doesn't.
Well, I went to the Donaldsons, and I was a little queen. Fine feathers make fine birds, and all the people were making much of me. How pleasant it must be to be rich. Well, at the ball, which was the first night he came, I suppose he really did fall in love with me. Oh, it was so awkward and uncomfortable. Then on the last day, he began to talk violent love to me and to beg me to promise to marry him. I was so frightened, I ran away. But that night I got a letter from him, renewing his offer, his entreaties for a promise of marriage to be fulfilled at any date I would please to name. In fact, a most urgent love letter, and in it a reference to my unlucky debt, which was to be a debt no longer, only an advance of the money, which was to be hereafter mine.
And what did he say?
Well, I liked him well enough, and I felt grateful to him. So I wrote, and I gave him my promise to marry him when I was 20. But it was to be a secret till then. Then I tried to forget that I'd ever borrowed money of him.
When did you begin to dislike him? You seem to have taken it very passively all this time.
I don't know. Somehow he made me feel as if I was in his power. Then after I'd been a semester at Madame Fletcher's, a new English girl came, a cousin of his who knew but little of me. Now, Molly, you must forget as soon as I've told you what I'm going to say. And she used to talk so much about her cousin Robert. How he was so handsome, and every lady in the land in love with him, a lady of title into the bargain.
Oh, Lady Harriet, I dare say.
Then she went on to say there was a very pretty widow, too, who had made desperate love to him.
Oh.
He had often laughed with them at all her little advances. No. And this was the man I had promised to marry and written love letters to. Oh, and such letters. I can't bear to think of them now. And all the things I said about Mama.
I was quick-eyed enough to all her faults, and I hardly understood the force of her temptation. He says he will show those letters to Papa unless I consent to our engagement.
Oh, he shall not. I am not afraid of him. He dare not insult me. I will ask him for those letters and see if he will dare to refuse me.
Oh, Molly, would you? Could you?
Yes.
Oh, it's such a relief to have told you all.
I'm sure we have right on our side. And that makes me certain he must and shall give up the letters.
I have here a letter from the London Kirkpatricks. Poor Helen has not been well. She has had influenza, which has left her weak and poorly.
Oh, let her come down here for a change of air. And I'll undertake to doctor her for nothing.
It would be charming. Should you not like it, Cynthia? And Molly, too. You, dear, would become acquainted with one of the girls, and I have no doubt you would be asked back again, which would be very nice.
And I should not let her go.
Dear Helen, I know. We could make your consulting room her own private sitting room, my dear.
Why can't she have the dressing room for her bedroom and the little room for her sitting room?
Why, it would hardly hold a sofa. No, my dear, we had better not ask her at all. Her own home is comfortable at any rate.
Well, perhaps you're right. It's a case of luxury versus fresh air. You know, I shall be glad to see her if she likes to come, but I can't give up my consulting room. Well, it's time I was off.
I'll write and tell them how kind Mr. Gibson is. They'll be just as much obliged to him as if she had come. Don't be too long, girls.
Molly, will you do it? Will you do what you said last night? I believe he would give you back the letters if you asked him.
Well, I'm...
Oh, please, Molly, please. You shall meet him in the avenue leading from the Park Lodge up to the Towers, where he often has business.
How is it you know that I shall be there?
Oh, never mind. He will be only too glad to come. Oh, if you can make him take back his abominable money and get me my letters, I will be grateful to you all my life. Then we would bury it all in oblivion. And he could marry someone else, and I would marry Roger, and no one would be the wiser. After all, it was only what people call youthful folly. And you may tell Mr. Preston that the moment he makes my letters public, shows them to your father or anything, I'll go away from Hollingford and I'll never come back.
What's this? Is Cynthia unable to come?
I did not know you thought that you should meet her.
She implied in her note that she would be here.
At any rate, she sent me here to meet you. She has told me exactly how matters stand between you and her.
Has she? She is not always the most open or reliable person in the world.
You should not speak so of the person you profess to wish to have for your wife. But putting all that aside, you have some letters of hers that she wishes to have back again.
I dare say.
And that you have no right to keep.
No legal or no moral right. Which do you mean?
Simply that you have no right at all as a gentleman to keep a girl's letters when she asks for them back again, much less to hold them over her as a threat.
I see you do know all, Miss Gibson. At least she has told you a story from her point of view. She promised me solemnly as a woman...
As a girl of barely 16.
Old enough to know what she was doing. She promised me solemnly to be my wife, making the one stipulation of secrecy and a certain period of waiting. She wrote me letters repeating this promise. Why, I might have married two or three girls...
I beg your pardon. I don't want to hear accounts of young ladies whom you might have married. I came here simply on behalf of Cynthia... who does not like you, and who does not wish to marry you.
Well, then, I must make her like me, as you call it.
She will never marry you.
In that case, if she ever honours anyone else with her preference, he shall be allowed the perusal of her letters to me.
I see.
You said that Cynthia was engaged. May I ask to whom?
No, you may not. But you may be sure of this. He would never read a line of your letters. He is too... No, I won't speak of him before you. You would never understand him.
It seems to me that this mysterious he is a very fortunate person to have such a warm defender in Miss Gibson, to whom he is not at all engaged.
No honourable man or woman will read your letters. What use can they be to you?
They contain Cynthia's reiterated promises of marriage.
She says she would rather leave Hollingford forever than marry you.
Does she say that in cold blood? Do you know you are telling me hard truths, Miss Gibson? If they are truths. Young ladies are very fond of the words hate and detest. I've known many who have applied them to men whom they were all the time hoping to marry.
I cannot tell you about other people.
I only know that Cynthia does as nearly hate you as anybody like her ever does hate.
Like her?
I mean, I should hate worse. So now, would you mind sending her back the letters by me? I do assure you that you cannot make her marry you.
You are very simple, Miss Gibson. I suppose you don't know that there is any other feeling that can be gratified except love. Have you never heard of revenge? Cynthia has cajoled me with promises and... Well, it's no use speaking of that. But I don't mean to let her go unpunished. You may tell her that. I shall keep the letters, and I shall make use of them as I see fit. It may be that Mr. Osborne Hamley will hear of their contents, even though he may be too honourable to read them. Nay, even your father may hear whispers. And if I remember rightly, Miss Cynthia does not always speak in the most respectful terms of the lady who is now Mrs. Gibson. There!
Stop! I won't hear anything out of these letters, but I give you fair warning. If I had not been foolish, I should have told my father, but Cynthia made me promise that I would not. So I will tell it all from beginning to end to Lady Harriet and ask her to speak to her father.
Lady Harriet?
I feel sure she will do it, and I don't think you will dare refuse Lord Cumnor.
Shh! Keep quiet. You will be seen, and you, at any rate, have done nothing to be ashamed of.
Why, Miss Gibson, your servant. Rather a blustery day for a young lady to be out. Hmm? And cold, I should say, for standing too long, eh, Preston?
Yes, I am afraid I have kept Miss Gibson too long talking.
Oh, yes, I must go at once. Good day, Mr. Sheepshanks. Mr. Preston.
Sorry to have disturbed your tete-a-tete, Preston. Oh, very sorry.
Come in. Well, Molly, have you got... Oh, I see you haven't. After all, I never expected.
I'm so sorry. I did all I could. We were interrupted. Mr. Sheepshanks rode up.
Provoking old man.
I don't like his finding me standing talking to Mr. Preston.
What did Mr. Preston say?
He seemed to think you were fully engaged to him and that these letters were the only proof he had. I think he loves you in his way.
His way, indeed.
The more I think of it, the more I see it would be better for Papa to speak to him. I did say I would tell Lady Harriet and get Lord Cumnor to make him give up the letters, but it would be very awkward.
Very. Oh, but he would see it only as a threat. I'll tell you what, Molly. You're bound by a promise, you know, and cannot tell Mr. Gibson without breaking your solemn word, but it's just this. I'll leave Hollingford and never come back again if your father ever hears of this affair. There.
But Cynthia, Roger!
Yes, I know. You need not remind me of him. But I'm not going to live in this house with anyone who may always be casting up in his mind the things he had heard against me, things which sound so much worse than they really are. Oh, I was so happy when I first came here. You all liked me. But now, why, Molly, I can see the difference in you already. You carry your thoughts in your face. You've been thinking, how Cynthia must have deceived me, keeping up a correspondence all this time, having half engagements to two men. You've been more full of that than of pity for me as a girl who's always been obliged to manage for herself without any friend to help and protect her. Oh, what a brute I am. Don't cry. I know it's the truth, and I deserve it. But I need not reproach you.
You did not reproach me. I have thought something of what you said. But I do love you dearly, Cynthia. I should have done just the same as you did.
Not you, Molly. No. No, you would not. Your grain is different somehow.
In part 7 of Elizabeth Gaskell's Wives and Daughters, dramatized in 9 episodes by Barry Campbell, the part of Molly was played by Catherine Herbert, Claire, Angela Pleasance, Mr. Gibson, Tom Wilkinson, Cynthia, Anne Louise Lambert, Mr. Preston, Brett Usher, Mr. Cox, Alex Jennings, Miss Browning, Diana Bishop, Miss Phoebe, Hilda Schroeder, Sheepshanks, Peter Tudnam, and Thelma Whiteley was Mrs. Gaskell. The music was composed by Rachel Portman, and the director was Jane Morgan.